Welcome to the Anti-Pattern Podcast, your ticket to the revolution in digital thread technologies. Please welcome, live from Mannheim, Germany, your hosts, Christian Mucheo and Michael Fenning.
Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of the Anti-Pattern Podcast.
Hello, everybody.
Today, we have some news for you. So, Michael and I...
I have been preparing something. Let me get it.
We've been to Berlin last week at the ProStep IWeb Symposium. And we also took part in the Startup Pitch Award.
Yes, so we are elevating patterns, and we had our elevator pitch at the Startup Pitch Award successfully.
Successfully, yeah. Michael did an extraordinary pitch.
Thank you. And we succeeded against three other really innovative startups.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helped us a lot to, at least I would say, draw a lot of attention to what we
are building. The visibility was enormous and very important for us.
Yeah, so that was great success. Mm-hmm. And the symposium itself, I mean, it definitely was not the first time that the two of us were going to, you know, that kind of conference, right? But it always feels like a class reunion. You meet so many people that you have been talking to for so many years. Not constantly, but, you know, from here and there, you know, it's always nice to see them again. And you always can, I would say, to a large extent, draw inspiration from the symposium.
Yeah, and that's so to say, the keyword for today.
Because, that was my segue.
Because we wanted to talk about the inspiration we have. And maybe the one or the other anti-pattern to conventional PLM implementations.
Yep.
Michael, where do we set our inspiration from?
A lot of things. And so maybe today we should talk about what are the inspirations for the technology, the tool, the platform that we are building, right? There is this this famous joke. Is it a joke or was it really a quote of George W. Bush, who once said, or supposedly said, the French are so business unfriendly, they don't even have a word for entrepreneur, which is hilarious on the one hand. The other thing is, entrepreneur, from what I learned from my lectures, basically, is entrepreneur can also be translated because it comes from entreprendre, excuse my French, right? Entreprendre, meaning in between and bringing stuff together or doing something, right? Mm-hmm. So in other words, if you are an entrepreneur, you are someone who takes something that already exists, brings it together, combines it new, right? And creates something new out of it, so to say, right? Mm-hmm. And this is also how I see us, right? We don't have to reinvent or invent all by ourselves, right? We can draw inspiration from a lot of things. And for the technology we wanted to talk briefly about today, what is it that we are getting our inspiration from?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and the first thing to mention is definitely MBSE.
Yes.
So some of you know, both of us have a huge history in MBSE in the last decade, over a decade.
So model-based systems engineering, for the ones who are not familiar with the abbreviation, but
very good. Yeah, and just to bring the next abbreviation, so MBSE is a huge field. And we can't name everything that inspires us from MBSE.
Right.
But two, three examples, it's definitely MDA, the model-driven architecture.
Right.
So the way you work or you think in meta model, data model, and instances.
Right.
Already adapted on our case. Yep. This is something we learned in from MBSE, or especially in our work at the OMG.
Right.
And this is definitely inspirational. Right. What is also inspirational is all the process you learn in MBSE and what's in ISO 15288 and so on, and all the ENCOSI stuff. It's very interesting to learn how structure and behavior works, how you should and could build up your architecture.
Right.
And also, our product has an architecture, our product has a structure, our product has behavior.
Right.
And where I personally get a lot of inspiration from is the new meta model of the SysML v2 standard. So kernel has a very interesting meta model.
Yep.
And if you compare our meta model with a kernel meta model, you will find some similarities.
You will see the inspiration.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And not to make it too scientific, but when we were at university and we're working on those kind of topics scientifically, right? We always said that all of the discipline models, right? CAD, you know, all that simulation models, they all are missing currently a common glue, right? A meta model, a common reference point, so to say, right? This is what's missing. And we said, or we identified SysML models, system models, to be one potential candidate for serve as that kind of glue that holds everything together. And what's also missing, and this is also the reason why we have that company, is we also need to bring it in the life cycle, because a system model by itself, isolated from everything else, is nice, but could do a way better job if it's integrated and managed over the life cycle, because you want to reuse everything you define in the system model also in later phases, right? Yep. So this is something that we definitely draw a lot of inspiration from. Talking about ProStep, you hear ProStep, but it's longer. It's ProStep IVIP. And the IVIP was a research project, a huge one, right? Around the 2000s.
Decades ago.
25 years ago, roughly, right? Mm-hmm. And that research project, I still have the final report of that project, at least a short version, lying on my nightstand, because from a concept perspective, my strong belief is we don't have to reinvent everything. There's a lot of really good stuff in it. You maybe have to add to it a little bit here and there, right? But the basic concept is there, and we don't really want to change it. What we say is the PLM concept, basically fine, right? What we want to do is bring in the core component for a federative PLM approach, as we already said, right? So from that perspective, we draw inspiration from that concept, but not so much from the tools that you find in PLM. Right? Mm-hmm. A little bit as well, but not too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another concept which is in our favor is definitely Git.
Right.
And some of you will ask yourselves, so what Git is for software, what does it have to do with digital thread platform or even PLM? And the thing is that it has very much to do with it, because Git has very interesting concepts if you look a little bit deeper in it. And even if we take these concepts like branching, merging, forking, and name it differently, you see, or you've seen these concepts, some of the concepts already in PLM systems on the market, but it has much more to offer. And this is what we are looking into when we are thinking of our versioning concept.
Talking about PLM, right? Most of the PLM systems out there, they have been focusing on document management, metadata for documents, metadata on top, right? Some structure, which usually, you know, you call BOM. I don't like the term BOM so much because I think it's a lie. But anyway, they do this, and usually they do manage data sequentially, right? That branch and merge is something in mechanical engineering, not that common, more in electronical engineering and definitely in software, right? So if you want to really have a mechatronical PLM system, you need to talk about branch and merge, right? There is no way around it if you don't just want to focus on the mechanical domain, right? So you need to do it. In PLM, I said a little inspiration we can take from them, not just what they did well, but also what was basically not a good idea, right? What you should do differently, right? And I want to say PLM, the concept is actually broader than most of the implementations of PDM PLM systems, right? So for example, manufacturing process planning needs to be part of the concept, right? It's only true for some of the vendors, not all of them. And equipment asset management, right? Latest lifecycle phase, MRO, if you will, right? Maintenance, repair, overhaul, also part of the whole concept of PLM. And those tools are usually not called PLM, right? They're called something else, right? But they need to be integrated, right? Because you want to go over the whole lifecycle, so you need to take care of them as well.
The next concept we would like to mention is something about variability. So you see in ALM and PLM systems different ways of managing variability or variance, and there is also an ISO standard available, highly interconnected also with MBSE, which is PLE, the product line engineering. And product line engineering has pretty decent, pretty nice concepts about variation points and how to describe families, product families, and so on. This is something we definitely will have a look into when we are thinking about our variability concept.
Definitely, because managing data is not just versioning, right? Mm-hmm. It's also variability, it's effectivity, right? And there's a lot of other stuff, you know, with workflows included. So all of that needs to be brought together into a joint concept. Talking about technology then, right? So Git was one technology, now another. What is maybe not so common, but is also our strong belief, is if you look into social media, if you look into how cloud native tools are actually built, right? This is something that we want to bring to the PLM domain because it's not around in the moment, not really, right? There are other startups doing similar things, right? But you know, companies that are older than 10 years, they basically just containerize the monolith, right? They don't build microservices, right? So this is an issue. And years ago, when we were working on university and I did my dissertation, I this was the first time I was exposed to graph databases, 2015, 16 around. 17, I handed in the dissertation and defended it. And I said, what we are trying to build with the whole lifecycle is so huge and you have so many relationships and it's so complex, you cannot do it in an RDBMS, right? As we already said, you need to have a graph database. So this is 80 years ago, right? And things did not really change.
It even got worse. It even got worse. Got more highly interconnected nodes.
Right, true. This is where we are drawing inspiration from the social media space, right? And just to add one thing here, it's always funny to me, and funny is a nice word for it. It's always funny to me to see that the tools you're using in your private life, you know, scrolling over LinkedIn, social media, they are from a technological perspective, way, way, way more sophisticated than the stuff you use at work. And that's the honest truth, right? It's true for all of the systems, be it CAD, PDM, ERP. All of them are not as sophisticated as Instagram, as LinkedIn, as Amazon, right? And that's, to me, really funny because you think in the business world, you would invest more in IT and would actually have the better solutions. And it's the other way around. It's unbelievable.
At least in engineering. Sadly, in engineering, but the truth behind these really well-working platforms is that they are all containerized, as you mentioned, but in very, very small pieces. So this microservice architecture is behind it. And the automatic configuration, automatic horizontal scalability comes from pipelines, from CI/CD pipelines combined with these microservices. And this is definitely a concept we will have a look into. And how small our microservices will be, we will see in the next months. But I can definitely imagine that something like a bomb app could be its own microservice. Why not?
Maybe they aren't going to be nano services then. Let's see. So this is technological perspective, right? And then maybe let me add two of them, which is more on the process side. So what we definitely need to look into, and I have been trained in this many years ago, is CM2, Configuration Management 2, right? So one of the standards for doing configuration management and change management, enterprise change management. And if you hear terms like change control board, ECO, ECN, hopefully, hopefully with the fast track, right? And then you know where this is coming from, right? And many people are actually talking about that stuff. And this is something we want to also bring into our tool, right? Support a change process. We don't just want to be a data lake, right? That searches for stuff and helps you to find something, right? We also want to write in the connected systems, meaning we want to run an enterprise-wide change process for at least engineering product data. Right. And I wanted to add a second one, sorry, the remanufacturing part. So circular economy is something that has you know, drawn a lot of attention lately, right? And specifically remanufacturing refurbishment. And why is this so interesting for us? Because it basically means that you run through the life cycle, not just from left to right, but you run through it from right to left, mm-hmm. right? Because you want to understand there is a part coming back to the factory with a serial number. And now I want to know every model that led to its production that was used to produce it in the end, right? So the assembly planning, right? How is it assembled? The CAD, the CAD models, right? The parameters, the PMI information for the for production, right? The NC code, right? The bomb, well, hopefully not just one bomb, right? E-bomb, M-bomb, whatever it was, right?
Service bomb.
Service yep. bomb, mm-hmm. yeah. So what is the information that led to it? And then you can decide, what can I do with it now, right? Can I bring it back into, you know, the next generation, just reuse it as a whole component? Do I have to disassemble it, recycle it, only use the material, right? That kind of questions you can only hardly answer today because the data is just not at your fingertips, right? It's spread over so many different tools so that you don't really, at least not automatically, right? You can only manually look for it and then, you know, draw some, you know, some attention from it, draw some conclusion from it. So this is why I guess circular economy and remanufacturing is something we need to look at when we build our tool and need to make sure that our architecture and the tools, the technological components that we choose are supporting such a process.
And therefore you have to have this circular concept not only in hardware but also in software, so in the information itself. What you find very often is some forward integration, so integration into another system just by calling webhooks and sending information, never thought about retrieving information. This could be very hard, for example, for an AI. AI needs a large set of data, a large set of context to really help you. And of course, also in AI, there are so many concepts we have to think about and we have to support directly or indirectly, like, let's say, RAG, Retrieval Augmented Generation. We will have a huge data lake, but we don't want to be a data lake. Want to make this data useful, usable, and therefore we have to look also in different directions what kind of concepts of AI we need to support.
And I mean, in easy terms, what we're currently doing is basically building prerequisite to then interface with an AI agent at some point, right? Because the knowledge graph that we are building, right, brings together data from all the tools, make it semantically more rich, right, so that the AI actually can do something with it in a secure way, because you don't want to lose your IP, right? That's an issue, right? And but the knowledge graph will help at this issue. Cool.
So, a lot of stuff.
The list is definitely not complete.
And where do you draw your inspiration from? Do you have some kind of idea what you would like to expect as a concept in a digital threat system? So if you have some thoughts on that, feel free to comment, like and subscribe this channel to not miss any other episode. And with that, I would say goodbye.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.